Woods, and we're back with another Page One podcast. And today I have Steve Patterson with me. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Sure, Mark. Glad to.
Steve's going to talk about a story in Sunday's paper about Durbin Creek Preserve. But before we get to that, I kind of like to illustrate kind of the institutional knowledge we have here in the newsroom. So, what year did you come here?
So I'm an old guy. I've been here since 1987.
Okay, yeah, let's see, we've got a few in the newsroom who trump you, but not too many. So Steve's covered through those years, if I can do the math, 30 some years, a little bit of everything, but a lot of kind of environmental issues, which is what this is, environmental zoning, those kind of things. Yes, tell us the story appeared in Sunday's paper. Explain what the story was about.
Sure. So in the southeast corner of Jacksonville, there is a patch of land called the Julington-Durbin Creek Peninsula. And it's something that the Water Management District, the state, and the city of Jacksonville spent about $17 million on buying for preservation back in the late 90s. And they got this land from a developer who had it under contract. It had been sitting there for many years, owned by basically a real estate investment group. And the developer sold it to the city, but has come back now recently and has a plan to acquire a few hundred acres of this land to expand his development of Bartram Park. And in return for this, he wants to take 403 acres of the peninsula and offers the state 403 acres on Black Hammock Island in exchange.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say this kind of preface. It's when I've been paddleboarding. I've gotten into paddleboarding the last few years, and it's one of my go-to spots is kind of Durbin and Julington Creeks, and I've paddled all over the area, but that's one of my favorites. You see a lot of wildlife. People ask, do you see gators? And hopefully not too often when I'm out there paddling, but I do see those, and I've once heard a big splash and a deer swam across the creek, and it just feels... it's a piece of old Florida, and I've hiked back in there. I've run in the preserve, and we also have a bike route that goes kind of down there. And wow, has that changed in the since I've been here in 2001? Because that was all undeveloped out there, and now it's just exploding. So that piece of land, I could see why it would be more valuable to a developer. But that's also exactly why I think it's more valuable to citizens who live near there. Excuse me, who live there near there, and who use it all the time. So what is the total acreage of the preserve? Do you know?
The total acreage is a little bit over 2,000. I think it's 2,031 acres. And again, he's Mr. Tom Dotson is the developer. He is seeking 403 acres.
So it's not a small piece of it. That's a pretty good chunk.
It is. Now, what's important to realize about this is a person could look at it and say, well, yeah, but that still leaves a large area as conservation, and it does.
Mm-hmm.
But what is being sought here is 403 acres that are uplands. The uplands are the places that builders want to build. They're easy to develop, and the wetlands in the lower areas are usually more of a headache for a developer. So he has not requested any of that, but there is a concern about taking 403 acres in essentially the highest areas within the property, and then how do you maintain or manage the rest of it?
Mm-hmm. Right. So obviously the exchange for Black Hammock Island, the argument they're trying to make is that this is a piece of land the city has wanted for a long time, which again, that's a special part of Jacksonville up there on the way on the north side. And I recently paddled from Betts Tiger Point, and so I was paddling where I believe was near this land that we went up toward Black Hammock Island, so I believe near the land they're talking about, and it would be an amazing piece to add to the kind of, would it be part of the Timaquan Preserve, or?
It's not labeled that currently, but it could be.
Right. So I get why we would covet that, but, you know, this, I get to be opinion, I get to be columnist, I'd be very troubled by the way we would get to it. I think it'd be a bad precedent. So, yeah, tell me a little bit about that land that up in Black Hammock Island.
So the land on Black Hammock Island is very nice, you know, undisturbed area, but it is very hard to compare directly to the Julian-Durbin Peninsula. They were there for different reasons. The Black Hammock Island property is what the environmental people and people who manage land think of as maritime hammock. Mm-hmm. That's a coastal area that's got sort of an uneven landscape to it, and has nice batches of hardwood trees that are very close to wetlands. And the Julian-Durbin Peninsula, the area that's being sought there is property that, you know, is straight uplands that were used in the past as a sort of a pine, commercial pine growing area, and the state has been going through a process of reestablishing the natural habitats that existed there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what? If people, you know, there's miles of hiking trails back there in the Durbin-Julian Preserve. What would they see if they hiked out there?
They would see, again, a lot of it is mostly pine, but there are some varieties of terrain. There is what's called sandhill communities. These are ridge of higher land that the peninsula is sort of built around, and that has gopher tortoises that burrow there to establish their nests, and then once they've done that, a ton of other species go in and make use of the same hole in the ground that the tortoise dug. That is just a different mix of creatures than you find mm-hmm. lower on the property as you get towards the creek.
Mm-hmm. So an interesting twist to this is that John Delaney, former mayor, UNF, former UNF president, figures into it because his legacy as mayor is as kind of our preservation mayor. So explain where the twist of John Delaney figuring into this is.
So John Delaney recently retired as the president of UNF, and when he retired from UNF, he decided that he would become, he would be involved with two firms, with Rogers Towers Law Firm and with the Fiorentino Group, which is a lobbying and government relations business. And so he is easing into his role with these two companies. He says he has not really started formally being hands-on involved with them. It's just a little bit out there. And one of the Fiorentino Group's clients is the developer, Tom Dodson's company, Eastland Corporation. And so John Delaney is realizing that one of the downsides of going into a new job is you got clients. And Eastland has had for the Fiorentino Group as its provider of lobbying and government relations work for a while. So Delaney stepped into a role where he has to represent his employer.
So he is lobbying for the developer to develop this land?
There is not yet a formal proposal by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is no lobbying that needs to be done.
Okay.
There's no lawyering that needs to be done out front anyway at this stage either. This is all simply being discussed in quiet ways that are intended to lead to a formal proposal. And so as we get into that, then yes, he would be lobbying.
And you had a quote in the story back in 1999, he said of preserving the Julington-Durbin Peninsula, he said, quote, may well be the most significant environmental land purchase in Jacksonville. So has he said anything on the record about the idea that we might take 400 acres of that most significant environmental land purchase in Jacksonville and develop it?
What he said on the record was he referred me over to Mr. Dodson. He did say that he had previously opposed the idea of selling conservation land, but that he could be comfortable with trading land if that could benefit both sides of a trade.
So I think in your story you said that part of their argument is that this would actually improve somehow Julington-Durbin Creek Peninsula. How do you argue that when you're cutting into it so dramatically?
And again, this is one of the things that remains undefined because there is not a formal proposal on the table. It's just in conversation stage. But the one thing that Mr. Dodson has said he plans to offer, in addition to the 403 acres, is he plans to offer $1.4 million for a series of improvements to the preserve on the peninsula. He specifies a series of things he'd like to do. He'd like to have a formal, set of toilet facilities at the preserve. Right now, they have essentially chlorified portlets out there, and he would like to have paved parking and improved access for horse owners, and a dog park, and several things that would make this much more comfortable for a typical user. The problem is that the preserve is right off of Bartram Park Boulevard, and property that's right off of Bartram Park Boulevard is where a developer is going to want to build his next development.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unclear how he can make these improvements without making them right in the very area that he's going to want to build houses on.
Mm-hmm. Right. When I first heard about it, this is preservation land. This is land that has been preserved. It's not simple to basically reverse that and say, okay, it's not preserved anymore. We're gonna develop it. What steps would be required? How does that play out?
It's a fairly obscure area, and I'm not entirely sure that I know all the details for this, but there are parts of the state constitution, there are parts of state law that require certain steps. There needs to be, as is explained to me, there needs to be a formal decision by the parts of the government that control this land that it's been held as conservation property but is no longer needed for conservation, and that should be a decision made by two-thirds majority of the deciding folks. And then, in addition to that, I am told that there is a need to decide, in this case, that the environmental outcome from preserving the 403 acres on Blackhammock Island would be equal to or more beneficial than the environmental good that's done by preserving that same number of acres on the Julington-Durbin Peninsula. And that's part of the challenge with this, because the two pieces of property, they're really parts of different environmental systems. So you could do a world of good for one end of Duval County, and if that comes at a cost to the other end of Duval County, who decides what outweighs the cost?
And then the idea that it would be no longer needed for conservation, that seems like a very, very hard sell to me, to say the least, because as I said, I mean, you illustrated in your story some of the numbers on how much that has boomed out there. It seems like, if anything, it's dramatically more needed for conservation today than it was in 1999. What were some of the statistics you threw out on how much that area has taken off?
The Bartram Park area has acquired about 7,000 homes and apartments in the last, you know, has acquired about 7,000 homes and apartments, and that's a huge number. This development, this swap, would allow the creation of another 1,400 homes.
What kind of reaction have you gotten to the story?
A lot of interest. A lot of people were surprised. People basically thought that this land was preserved permanently. And on a functional level, it is. Most of the time, when you preserve land, it stays preserved. The process for deciding, well, we're not going to do that anymore, is a hard one. And it's designed to be hard so you don't end up having land that it basically gets just sort of bartered one way or another as the real estate market changes. But people want to understand how this works. And I think we will find out much more about this when we get a formal proposal and we get something that that the agencies involved can look at and say, all right, this is the part of state statute that applies to it. This is the part of state constitution that governs it. And here's how we make our decisions.
Did I see the St. John's Riverkeeper is arranging a public rally down there?
I have heard that. I did not put anything about that in the story, but I've heard that's something they had under consideration.
Yeah, I think they're working on the details of that. And I'm guessing a lot of folks that already live down there will be disappointed to hear if this disappears. So
a lot of people use that peninsula, and a lot of them enjoy hiking and running there and paddling. So I think there are going to be a lot of people feeling their ox being gored.
Right. And obviously you're just covering the news side. I get to have an opinion, so folks can read Steve's news coverage, and I plan to write a column for Wednesday's paper where I do get to have an opinion, and I just think it's a horrible precedent to, I mean, we see it these days. I feel like we see it happening on a national level where we're taking some of our National Park Service sites and shrinking them, and so now we see this happening on a local level, but it's just kind of a reminder that we tend to think of these places that we've locked them away and thrown away the key, but that is not indeed the fact. Sometimes if you have the right people and the right sway, and things can be reversed, and the way to prevent that is for people to say, no, we're drawing a line here. And I just think as much as it'd be wonderful to have that piece of Black Hammock Island for public land, I think it'd be a horrible precedent to get at it from this way. So please continue to follow Steve's news. You can go back and read his story on jacksonville.com, and I'm sure he'll have more stories as this unfolds. So thanks for being a part of a Page One podcast.
It's been a pleasure.